Goodbye, Brat Summer. Hello.
Fatal Fall. Welcome to If I Speak, the podcast for overthinkers, yappers, and the generally neurotic. Speaking of which, how are you doing, Moya?
Lol, thanks. Do you think I'm neurotic? Do you think I'm neurotic?
Oh my God.
Wow, I answered the question.
I think we're both neurotic.
Answered the question with the ask in the first place. How am I doing? I'm fine. I am, by the time this comes out, I will be probably moved house maybe, or I'll be about to move house. Currently knee deep in house removal things, which is actually very relevant to what we'll be getting onto. But so I'm torn between both ordering for a house that I'm going to move into and sorting out shit in the house that I currently live in, which meant yesterday I, in classic ADHD fashion, at 7 p.m. found myself doing the entirety of the bottom cupboard that we've been saying we're going to do for ages and doing a massive clear out, and ended up in like a little cape and Shrek ears, which was an enjoyable evening. And then I'd forgotten my friend was coming around to pick something up. So I was going outside with some rubbish and answered the door, and she happened to be standing outside. She was like, hey. And I was like, ah. And I thought, she was like, oh, I thought you knew I was coming. And I was like, I'm nowhere near my phone, I'm so sorry. And she's like, why the fuck have you got Shrek ears on? So that was what happens when you clear out.
I hear you've got some questions for me.
I do have some questions for you. Okay, number one, have you always been a Marie Kondo?
No, I haven't always been a Marie Kondo. Like I, you know, as a teenager was like very, very messy and had no idea how to keep a space nice. And I think I'm still like, I do my clear outs in like waves, right? So like it's all going to happen on one day where I throw away like half of the things I own. But by throw away, I also mean like give to charity and da 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 da. But no, messy teenager, became civilized in my 20s, and now I'm just like, throw shit out. I fucking hate holding on to like broken junk. I hate it.
Yeah, I'm also going through a similar process in that I used to be a terrible hoarder, and weirdly through partners, then I slowly stopped, and now I'm like, I'll do the same as you. I'll have one day of like big clear out. Everything goes to different places, whether that's the bin or the charity shop. And I've managed to get ruthless now. Although sometimes I will find shit and be like, I need that in the future. I need that wig. But but like broken shit just goes.
I'm gonna need those Shrek ears.
I am gonna need those Shrek ears. We had a dressing up box when I was little. I've got to carry on that. Anyway, next question. Seasonal. What's your favorite part of autumn?
Crispy leaves.
But you can get this in summer now, because thanks to climate change.
Yeah, but it's not the same as like when they all get swept up into the piles outside people's houses. I was thinking this and my partner was just like, you fucking nerd. I was like, I love September. I love autumn. It feels like the real new year, because it's like the start of the academic year. And I think of like pencil shavings, and I think of apples, and I think of glossy, glossy conkers, and I think of school shoes, new school shoes. I think of like wrapping your textbooks in like brown paper. And
did you wrap your textbooks in brown paper? Did you go to a fucking...
Yeah, you had to.
Where? What sort of Victorian school did you go to?
You had to, because they gave you the textbooks and so like you wouldn't fucking wreck them.
Did you also wrap the slates that you wrote your chalk alphabet on in brown paper?
Yes, before holding my hand out to be caned.
I love conkers, but conkers now terrify me because they get earlier and earlier each year. But I used to collect conkers, not to do anything with, just because they were so shiny, like a mad magpie. So there'd be like big bags of rotting conkers in our porch. Mum would be like, get these the fuck out of here. Because I'd have collected them all when they're shiny and just left them there as they dulled, which says a
get
lot
get these
about
disgusting
me.
Conkers yeah. out. So, all right, I'm going to tell you like a very, very quick story.
Okay.
At primary school, there was one song in assembly that got us all so lit that we were only allowed to sing it twice a year, because it would like get all the kids so like, aah! It was like a Rage Against the Machine gig, and they played like Killing in the Name Of. So like you could only do it twice because like the kids would be unteachable, ungovernable afterwards. And a song called Conkers. And it went like...
Some people think I'm Conkers. But I just think I'm free.
I just think I'm free. Okay, nothing I can say can be that. No song can say can be that. But like, The chorus was like, conkers, I'm collecting conkers. I'm trying hard to find the biggest and the best. Dun, dun, dun. And we'd obviously like sing the dun, dun, dun. But like by the final chorus, we'd be like, conkers, I'm collecting conkers. Like we'd just be like screaming it. Like I've never known like a kind of like
mass hysteria.
Mass hysteria, like Dionysian, like kind of excess, like full loss of control as like, you know, being in like year four and like singing the Conker song. And I think one of the verses was like, under the chestnut tree, it waits for me, a sight so marvelous to behold, to behold. And then like, da 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 da, ah, Conker! Beautiful and bold.
The music teacher's just got conkers. Steam coming off the piano by the end of the music teacher's like Elton John, like,
I know, levitating. Like, really, like playing with his like playing with his feet. Literally. Like it was so like I cannot describe how like lit we would get. So actually, baby, I'm gonna reassess. My favorite part of autumn is conkers.
Conkers, yeah.
Conkers.
I think they've really earned that. Okay, what was my last question? Last question was gonna be like, what was your go-to teen magazine? Just completely disconnected.
Oh, I mean, I guess maybe we read like a lot of like Sugar when we were like 11 and 12, and then afterwards it was like Cosmo Girl. What about you?
I think it was just Cosmo. It was just Cosmo because that was the 101. I don't remember Sugar. There might have been, there wasn't any like Teen Vogues or anything. I think it was just Cosmo occasionally because that was the most interesting.
That was like teen like girl magazines, but like I got the NME quite a lot when I was in my like
rock
tweens
on.
And teens.
You're so cool. By the time I was a teenager as well, I guess the internet had really cranked into gear. So I remember reading Rookie, the digital mag.
Oh yeah.
A lot when I was like really getting into teen years. What else did I read? Spark Notes had a like advice sections and things like that. So I read that a lot.
And oh really?
What else did I fucking read online as a teen? That's counts as a teen magazine. I guess occasionally Dean. It was mostly things like Exo Jane and Gawker and Jezebel. Which
I remember
explains a lot about why I am the way I am.
I remember Exo Jane had this like, because they did like a lot of first person essays. And I remember like a first person essays, which was like written by a thin white woman who was like, it happened to me. A plus size black woman came into my yoga class and I felt so awkward and sorry for her that I basically had a nervous breakdown. And I remember reading it. And I was like, bitch, what the fuck was wrong with you?
I'm pretty sure that was written by Caroline Polachek's sister. But yeah, I remember that essay so well. Anyway, let's go on to the middle section.
This week's intrusive thought was inspired by the fact, Moya, that you are moving city, you are moving house, and you are embarking once again on the process of creating a home out of the place where you live. And I'm just sort of interested in what defines a home rather than just a place where you're staying, right? What's the difference between a household and a house share? And what are the ingredients necessary to make you feel like you've got a place of respite, safety, comfort, and nourishment when, I guess for so many people, that isn't what home is like at all? Like, I've lived in some, like, proper fucking, like, shitholes where, like, you know, the fact that not all the walls joined up at the corners was secondary only to the dynamics within the house, which were just, like, uncomfortable and jarring. And a big part of that was to do with being young, right? Like in your 20s and your communication with other people isn't good and you're all very bad at communicating reasonable expectations. But I think also I didn't understand what was needed to make, you know, two people, three people, four people, you know, sometimes five people feel like they had made a conscious choice to live together in a way that was like actively improving their lives and wasn't just like an arrangement to make London renting bearable. So yeah, I guess my question for you, Moya, is what are you thinking in terms of how to turn the place where you're living next into a home? Is that a conscious process at all, or are you just going to feel your way through it?
So conscious. I think it has to be conscious. I think that's also, you said, oh, you know, what, when people feel, how can you separate between people feeling like they've just been forced to live together? Often people have been forced to live together. There's a key difference here, which is money as well. When you're in your 20s and and you can still be in this in your 30s, 40s, but I think for us when we're in our 20s, particularly skint, and prices are going up, and there was somehow, it's weird that I've lived in all corners of London. I've lived with all types of different people. I've lived in all types of different houses. And I would say there's only one where there was like real friction, which I won't talk about because I don't think it wasn't a nice dynamic for anyone. But it also, I don't think either of our faults. I think it was just a case of like ending up living somewhere where we both brought our own issues and they didn't complement each other. But other places I've lived in like real hovels and they've still felt like a really lovely home because of the people I was living with and the atmosphere we created. And so there's a couple of things. But you asked about conscious decision. I'll start there. Yeah, it's an absolutely conscious decision to create a home with the person I'm moving in with. It's one of my oldest university friends who I'm so lucky happens to be wanting to like settle down in Glasgow for a bit and has been living there on and off for like the last 6 months. And she's actually said to me explicitly, I want to create a home. I want to make this base for us that feels homely. And so we've been identifying some of the elements. We're also moving into an unfurnished flat, so we have to furnish it ourselves. And that's been like a real process where you're just like, what do you think of this piece? What do you want? Like, not just trying to impose your vision of a space on someone, but really coming to a middle ground where it's like, okay, I love this sideboard and I think that would be really good there. You love this table. Let's go with this table because we picked this bookcase for me. So we're really like, you know, back and forth, even in terms of the furniture. But when she was talking about what it takes to make a home for her, she was like, lots of like communal cooking. And I was like, yep, I'm on board with that. I'd love to do that. She was like, you know, oh, she wants to do like yoga in the space because she practices yoga. She was talking about taking some classes together, like have lots of people over to be with us. And those were all things where she wasn't saying you have to do this X, Y, Z. She was like, this is what I would like. Here's my vision of what makes a home. How do you align with that? And luckily I'm quite aligned in like a lot of those things. So, but it's about presenting stuff to someone else and saying to them, this is what my what a home idea looks like. I'd love to try this with you. How do you feel about it? Before you've even maybe created that space together, because otherwise you're just sort of like bumbling along and you're not setting out any ideas of what you want. It's the same with relationships, which I think an episode that's recently gone out, I was talking about like, what do you want from a relationship? If you don't think about it and actually identify key things that don't have to be like this completely, I don't know, you know, iron rule, they have to look like Ryan Gosling, but more like, I want these traits, I want these things. Do that with a home as well. What do you want from a home space? Otherwise, you will end up not voicing to the person that you're trying to create this space with what it is that you sort of expect as a base level. You know, in terms of cleanliness, like how much, like what's your level of cleanliness? What's theirs? And what's the compromise in the middle? Like the house I live in now, I think we've got we all agree we have a really special house and it's worked out really well. And we all kind of got a bit thrown together, but we were friends of friends and I was the one selecting who moved in. So I picked on vibes who I thought would work. And it's not that there hasn't been points of friction or whatever, but we have made the effort to actually work on those and iron those out. And I think we've formed like really important friendships from this. Like I live with people who I don't want to lose from my life. And I didn't know that well before. And I think there's really special friendships that have been formed through that. And it's been through also saying like, you know, adjusting to people, like someone saying to me, this is how, like, sometimes I need, you know, just to like block out the world and not have noise and all of this kind of stuff. And not, they're not saying it in a way where they're like, I expect you to do this. They're saying, this is something, an adjustment that really helps me in my home space. And it's not all the time, but if you can respect that sometimes, that's really good. And I go, and I don't want to react in like a way that's like defensive and like, well, you know what, this is my space. It's like, no, I can easily do that. When you sit and think about it, you're like, oh, I can, you know, for this portion of the day, and it's not that rigid, but for this portion of the day, when I see you doing this and I see you have your headphones in, I'm not going to bother you. I'm not going to fuck around. Like, I don't need to do that. That's what is the adjustments. It's the constant like doing this and not doing it from a place of like ego. And this is my house and my space. It's like, this is a shared space. How do we make it so we're respecting each other constantly?
I suppose one of the things that you've hit upon is that something which I think defines a household rather than a house share is shared habits. And so for some people, those shared habits are to do with communal cooking. All right. That is like the most common one, which is the idea that you're going to share these meals together. You know, and that implies certain things. One is that you don't have like a rigid distinction between your food and my food. All right. So you're not drawing all these really, really tough boundaries of like what belongs to who. What instead you're doing is you're saying, well, like, here is a space of like sharing and a kind of like don't take the piss level of like negotiation. But the idea is that it's not actually being determined by these like hard and fast rules. Right. So I think that actually the communal cooking and communal eating, it's got all of these other implications for like how you think about costs, right? And how you think about belonging and possession. There's the other bit, which is, of course, conviviality. Shared meals means conviviality, social space, bonding, becoming closer. But those shared habits can also be different ones. Like, so I live with my partner and our best friend, who started out as his best friend, and then through years and years and years, including years of living together, I have like an independent friendship with. But also, it's not really independent because we very much come as like a little dumbass trio, like dot, 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 dot. And so the shared habits aren't always shared between the three of us, but like very often are. So some of the shared habits for the two of them are like going for a run or going to the gym. Like that'll be something that they do without me. Like shared habits for me and the best friend are like, we fucking love like double screening. So like put something up on the projector and like also scrolling phones and just being like, meh, 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 meh. Whereas my partner is like, guys, can you just be like in the moment watching the thing we're all watching together? And we're like, no, we want to double screen. That's what makes it fun. You know, that the fact that like we've got shared interests matters, but also I think that we all agree that like the communal spaces in the house, like, you know, if someone's like got their headphones in, you leave them be when they've got their headphones in. But there is always an expectation that like there'll be conversation and like contact in those communal spaces. You're not alone together. Like, you know, you're just not. And I think that's something that we really wanted, because we did previously live in a house share, which included more people than just the three of us. And I don't think that there was, while there was like a lot of affection there and there was like a lot of good that came from it, there was just not that same sense of like, we want to form a household and it means these things. I think it was much more a feeling of like, well, we've all been thrown together through necessity, and inevitably like friction and resentment emerged from that, in a way which like now looking back on, I was like, well, maybe we should just shouldn't have lived together. Like, it's not that like I was a bad person, you're a bad person, or this person was awful. It was just like, weren't temperamentally meant to live together. Like, we all just had like different desires and expectations. And I think that like when you are thrown that close to someone, everything they do will irritate you. And unless you're like really simpatico, like everything you do will irritate them and everything they do will irritate you. And like just an example of it is like, if you come downstairs in the morning, you're in the kitchen, you're making a tea or a coffee, that's a like, hey, how did you sleep time? Whereas like for this person who I was living with, that was very much like, don't talk to me time. And I would end up feeling a bit like disciplined, and they would end up feeling a bit like intruded upon, and that we just couldn't square that circle. Because it wasn't a habit I could break. Like, I'm physically incapable. If someone enters a room, I'm physically incapable of not being like, oh, hey, how you doing?
Yeah, my house is very like, they'll say like, hey, how are you doing? But we all know in the morning, first thing, let us all warm up. So we'll just be like, hey. And it's like, hey. We'll just say hi. And then later, when we're ready to natter, you can feel it. And we're like, blah, 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 blah. I'm meant to be at work. Blah, 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 and like go on for ages. So that's, I really get what you mean when you're aligning, your energies align in the way that you approach the world. If you live with someone, it's a good thing to to both talk about it and also understand that you have similar ways of moving about the world and similar cues. And just because, for example, someone's quiet in the morning doesn't mean that they're mad at you. It just means that they literally need some time to warm up.
But then sometimes they will be mad at you, right? Sometimes it will be like they've anticipated being mad at you because you won't fucking shut up. And this is me being the person that won't shut up. Like, you know, like you can feel those energies. And I think it's...
Why didn't you shut up, Ash? Why wouldn't you just shut up?
I can't help it.
But they like, can't help being mad if they want that space. So you are right. It was maybe neither of the other, but
No. They weren't wrong and I wasn't wrong either. It's just like we had completely different models in our head for what living in a shared space would mean.
Question, when you lived in a house with a bad vibe, can that ever be saved once the bad vibe is set in?
No. I do not think it can. Like, sorry, I was like, no, next question. But like, no, I don't think it can, or at least it hasn't in my experience. One is that something which helps dissipate bad vibes is distance, right? You get a break from each other. You are, you know, giving each other space. That is literally impossible if you live together. Two is that, like, my experience is that by the time you articulate something, there's actually been so much resentment building up that, like, the dam breaks. So, like, either, like, you mean to say one thing and you say 10 things, or you say one thing and they say 10 things. They're like, wow, what the fuck? Like, and I'm like, what's he saying fuck me for? Like, I was just asking, like, you know, oh, if the milk goes off, can you chuck it out? And, like, now you're telling me this is why my dad left? Like, what the fuck? Like, you know, it was like, that didn't happen, by the way. That didn't happen. That's me being silly. But, you know, all these things would, like, come out. And I think that, like, there have been, like, various attempts to make... So, you know, like, the idea of the house meeting. It's like, okay, time for a house meeting. It's like, house meetings are, like, really good for, like, going through practical things. So, like, you know, occasionally we'll have a house meeting where it's like, oh, okay, well, like, this thing is broken, or like, oh, do we want to, like, build a bookshelf? Let's just have, like, a house meeting where we can, like, get quotes for all the work that needs to be done and work out, like, how we're going to do it and when we're going to do it and, like, who's paying for what. Very, very good. House meetings to talk about anything with emotional content, or, like, that shit is, like, hideous. I mean, like, have you had an experience of, like, an emotional house meeting?
Yeah, loads. With the situation I was talking about at the start, there were lots of different emotional house meetings. And we managed to create, like, enough of a truce, an understanding, to, like, carry on the house for as long as we had to live in the house. But we brought a lot of our own baggage to the table. And for some reason, this person and I, it just came out with each other. That, but I'd never had that before in a house situation. And, like, I couldn't, like, understand it and why it was coming out. And it was a really good lesson. It was a really good lesson for me. And I think made me much more conscious of other people's needs as well. Like, I could have been like, yeah, it's all about my needs, blah, blah, blah. But no, like, the thing you can take from lessons like that, really harsh lessons, is, like, how to actually account for someone else. And, like, in my current house, you know, every time, because we've formed a real friendship with people there, and because with friendship sometimes there's friction, and if there's been friction, like, one of my housemates and I have a couple of times had things to talk about which haven't been related to the house, have been related to, like, friendship stuff. And I have a habit of at first being quite defensive, but then I will immediately sort of be like, okay, actually, what, think about what you're doing, and then be like, no, let's listen to what they're saying, let's capitulate. And it's each time, it's like, just, I think, made our understanding and bond stronger. Like, I really, really depend on her. I've depended on her a lot emotionally for lots of stuff, and she's become, like, very important to me in loads of ways. And I don't actually think some of the points of friction are that different to in terms of baggage and stuff, and bringing baggage to, like, the housemate I had the experience that I would say was quite horrible for both of us with. But this time it's like, I'm from that, I've actually learned to listen to what they're actually saying to me and what they're actually trying to bring to me, and the thing, and also because we have a friendship, it's like there's different dynamic there, and we built this friendship.
That sounds also so similar to, like, how you go from, like, one relationship to another relationship. Yeah. I'm talking about a romantic one, where it's just like, okay, like, actually the things that are being said aren't that different from something that's come up before, but my ability to, like, hear you has really, really changed. And that does just come with, like, getting older and, like, you know, making mistakes, learning from them, and then making brand new ones.
What I was going to say was, what's interesting is I discovered from that situation with the housemate where we had lots of tension and, you know, exposed a couple of times, was that you can live in the nicest house possible and it still might not be a home, because it really does matter who you live with. And you can live in the hovel, like I lived in a Dalston hovel, I would call it, and I lived in a Camden hovel. And those spaces, because of the people I was with and because of the relationships we built, became homes, even though you can pay me to fucking go back to those crusty ass places now, because now I've lived in, like, some nice houses. And again, that comes with making more money and being able to, like, afford a better standard of living. which not everyone has, but there was an ability to build a home with those people and a household. And like, it came from the relationships, which were reciprocal and caring. They were really caring. And they became more than just the housemate relationship. And even if do you leave, when you lose touch with people, like there's still a fondness there, and so you still check in with them, and there's still like people I will talk to every now and then. We're not like close friends anymore, but it was those are really formative, special relationships, and they came from being thrown in a house together. Someone asked me the other day whether if I could, I would choose to live on my own.
Would you?
Well, this is my answer was in London, where I have all these networks and like built over 11 years of like care and community and all the buzzwords, but all these like very special relationships, I maybe would, maybe. In a new city, absolutely fucking not. Like, I'm moving in with an old friend. I also have a thing about like, don't live with like your best mate. I think that sometimes will end in disaster because it's too close. And as soon as there's a fight over the washing up, it's not a fight over the washing up. It can be everything. If you're old enough and like mature enough, it doesn't have to be, but it can sometimes get nasty. Whereas living with like a friend you have this like long standing, really close, intimate relationship with, who, but you haven't been like the same place for a long time, there's still enough remove where you can keep those things in check, I think. Anyway, I don't know. I've got older. But
I lived with my best friend in like second year of uni. And actually, I mean, like, we didn't fall out or anything. Like, it was perfectly fine. But we actually became much more emotionally close when we no longer lived together.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something about it.
I think it was something about like just having that like bit of distance and that sort of conscientiousness about seeing each other. So it wasn't just like, oh, we're encountering each other in the place where we live. But now the situation I'm in is different. Like, yeah, the fact that like we live with our best friend, it's like, you know, we're so close. It feels like a family, actually.
You chose that best friend. I think I wouldn't want to be thrown together with one of my, I think I would want to know how I lived with them before we committed to like, say what you did, which was buy a house together and be like, we are locking in. We're locking in as a three because we work really well as a three. But this is what I was saying about the having housemates. I think 5 years ago or 2 years ago even, I'd have been like, yeah, of course I want to live on my own. And since then I've realized that living on my own would not be good for me. I think it is a much better for my need to actually push myself to be like emotionally available and not just care for other people, because I martyr myself. There's a difference between caring and martyring. And sometimes I martyr myself, but letting other people also care for me and forcing myself to compromise with people and negotiate and take that step back and not just be like this dominant person all the time who gets things her way, always, 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 but come up against people who say, no, hang on, we need to talk about this. We need to negotiate this. There was a situation recently where like I was trying to sort out the new tenant for my room all on my own. And my housemate was like, but I want to feed in on this. Like, I was like, yeah, but you get to choose the ultimate person. I was like, I'm just trying to help. I'm just trying to speed run it. And they were like, no, because like, the way that the process normally goes is like we would, you know, we'd all feed in together and we'd discuss it beforehand and do all this. And I thought I was trying to be helpful, just trying to like get them candidates and feed them people. And I'm like, no, you don't have to do that. Like, this is a...
Is that because you felt a bit guilty about leaving?
I think it wasn't guilt per se. It was more like I wanted to get it so sorted quickly because I don't like things not being fixed and sorted, and I need to get a new person on contract, all of this stuff up in the air. So I just wanted to be as like least amount of trouble possible and just get it done. And I was like, I'll do all this and do all this. And then they were like, no, we need to, there's the idea of being able to slow down. These people come with different like experiences to you and different perspectives. And that is such a good thing. As a person, not just for your growth, but theirs. And like living with other people, if you build relationships that are really caring, you really do get something special out of it, and you really do build something special. And that goes for like the good times and the bad. I don't know how I'd have got through this year without like particularly one of my housemates. He's just been, there's been such a special back and forth there.
All right, before we move on to dilemmas, what is the worst thing about you as a housemate and the best thing about you as a housemate?
Worst thing, oh, probably loads of stuff. Probably I'm awful in the morning. I'm like, when I go silent, I don't want to talk. That's probably a bad thing.
Oh, okay.
Definitely that one. Also, I leave my drying up for ages. I fucking hate taking my drying down. like my dry washing. It's just there for ages until the next washing load. Like, I hate doing that. So that's a bad thing. Saying I'll sort something out and then sometimes not doing it till I'm able to. Also, I won't lie, there was a pantry moth infestation and it came from my cupboard. And that was a big nightmare for one of my housemates.
Pantry moths, man. We've got them at the moment.
I can talk about pantry moths. There was like a whole mass of eggs in my cupboard that I didn't realise. So I had to go in and just like raid, everything had to go, had to raid the, like raid spray everywhere, bleach everywhere, like all of that. It was vile. They were there for ages and just keep spraying them. But they get into, they got into a closed mason jar. They can get,
they get into closed things. Oh.
You've got to get rid of everything. Everything has to go because as soon as you see the netting of their, like, it's almost like it's fecal matter or whatever. As soon as you see the netting or like little, they've got under the rims, like they are everywhere. You have to get rid of all that shit and it has to be sprayed daily until they go away. That's my pantry moth.
Ugh.
So those are probably my worst traits. My best traits, I'm not going to lie, I do take on a lot of the organisation. Like, I had all the bills in my name. I'm the one who will pick up new loo roll before we run out of loo roll. I'm the one who every week changes the towels and the like bath mats and make sure everything's like clean. My housemate's really good for cleaning floors. I don't like doing the floors. I will, you know, I used to be the bin person. They've all taken on more of the bins now, but like I am the person who replaces everything. I'm the person who does all that. I am that person. I am the direct debit girl. That is my job. What about you?
All right. Worst things about me. I don't leave my drying up on the drying rack for ages. It's that once it goes back into the laundry bag to go into my wardrobe, that's where it will linger, like, for ages. Like, and I don't know why. It's like there's like a mental block on it. I mean, the other is that, like, I have an objectively ill-disciplined cat that thinks that he owns the house.
But that's not you. That's just Musa.
Yeah, that's not me. That's him. But like also when the three of us all moved in together, Musa, I think, you know, because he obviously knew the housemate from before because like, you know, he'd stayed with us a lot. He was always in the house. But now living together, Musa was like, oh, you are the runt of the litter, and like really fucking like bullied him. And so we're like trying to like steal his food and stuff. And I'm like looking him directly in the eye and like bat him in the face. Like it took ages for Musa to accept that like, the housemate wasn't the runt of the litter and that Musa wasn't like the boss of him. Cause he was like, okay, the hierarchy goes mum, dad, me, housemate. Like that was, he's like, that's the hierarchy. So yeah, that was probably quite bad. Oh, I'm really disorganized in the fridge, which means that like, I don't respect the, like there are different shelves for different things.
Oh, Ash.
Yeah, Ash. No, I don't respect that.
Ash. But you don't, you're not as separate as our house, I think, in the shelving. We have separate shelves, even though
we don't have that. But also
like butter and shit.
They want different shelves for like the jars go here and the this goes there. And
I know,
the
that's a bit annoying. No, don't worry about that.
No, I just fucking like shove everything in.
Yeah, that's
like when the shop comes. So those are the worst things about me. I think the best things about me are that like I am always up for hanging out. Like just always up for like a shit talk and a giggle. Mm. Great cook. And do lots of it, and I always do my communal cleaning.
Oh, that's okay. The communal cleaning is the most important thing. Communal cleaning is most important.
Shall we address a dilemma?
Yes, let's do a dilemma.
This is I'm in Big Trouble, which is our regular dilemma segment. And if you are in big trouble and won't sue us if we give you bad advice, do email us at ifispeak@navarramedia.com. That's ifispeak@navarramedia.com. I think we've got time for one dilemma, but this is a good one.
Do you want to read it out or shall I?
I think you should read it.
My friend, 26, no hello, okay. Hi to you too. Joking.
What about the ass kissing? We want the ass kissing.
No ass kissing, just a hi. There probably was a hi and I just didn't copy over. Anyway, my friend, 26 female, has a serious crush on a lecturer at uni, mid-40s, male. This has been going on for a few months. My friend has said she thinks her feelings for this guy are totally inappropriate, that there's no chance of a relationship, and she's trying to get over him. She said that he has never flirted with her or expressed interest in her. On the other hand, she chose him as her dissertation supervisor and dwells on all their interactions. Recently, she tried to arrange to meet him outside of uni and also decided to stay in our uni town after graduation. She's moving house to somewhere nearer than him and told me she thinks staying in the city will give a chance that a relationship could happen. As a bit of context, my friend is an international student and speaks English as a second language, so sometimes it can be hard to discuss matters of the heart. However, she has confided in me that she has low self-esteem. I don't think she needs to confide in you for you to guess that. And never thinks she's good enough. She also experiences depression, which flared up badly recently around uni deadlines. At first, I thought it was just a crush, but now I think it's full-blown unrequited love. I feel like indulging in the crush reinforces her low self-esteem as it plays into the idea she isn't good enough. I've tried suggesting dating other people, and she says she doesn't have time as she needs to focus on her work. I'm a bit worried about her, and I think she's quite vulnerable, but I am prone to interfering and giving unwarranted advice. So I'm trying to remember it's her life, and she needs to work through it in her own way. However, I recently heard a rumour that this lecturer is dating a former student, somebody who was in our class and graduated a few weeks ago. It's only a rumour, and I don't know the girl in question. I think this has upset my friend a lot, and she is still working on her dissertation with him as her supervisor. Do I tell my friend about the rumour, and how do I support her through this possible heartbreak? Ash.
Okay, so there is a really amazing essay by Amiya Srinivasan in The Right to Sex, which is basically about student-lecturer relationships. And what she argues, and I was like, oh my God, this is so bang on, is that in therapy, there's a concept called transference, where the patient often feels like they're falling in love with or infatuated with the therapist. And it's because all of these intense emotions kind of get like transposed onto this like figure of authority and like emotional intimacy. And what Amiya Srinivasan argues is that transference happens within the context of the seminar room all the time. Because like, you know, there is something kind of erotic about like someone standing up and being like a font of knowledge and someone whose validation you're literally working for. And that when you're no longer in school, the social context is a bit different. Like you can go for a drink with a lecturer, like, you know, the Christmas parties, there'll be like alcohol around and stuff. Like it changes that context. And so she says that like, often what this is isn't, you know, what you would call love, though the feelings are very intense, it's transference. And then what she says is that, you know, the lecturer owes it to the student to never act on those feelings, even if they're reciprocated or whatever, because what you are doing when you reciprocate the sexual or romantic attention of a student is you're robbing them of their right to know that their work is actually good or not. And you will instill in them a sense of self-doubt about how good their work actually is forever if you reciprocate it. And I thought it was so well argued. And I think that that's relevant here. Like, this seems like a classic case of transference. And I think you can be there for your friend. And I think you can talk about that. Maybe you could recommend this essay. But, you know, you've said yourself, special one, that you are prone to interfering. So this idea that hearing a rumor means like, oh, do I tell my friend about the rumor? No. Because that will just drive the drama. And I wonder if you derive a bit of meaning from being the rescuer. And so like, here's this friend and she's vulnerable and she's got low self-esteem and she's, you know, infatuated with the lecturer. And oh, do I tell her? Do I not? How do I support her? I think you derive a bit of your identity from being the person who gets to rescue your friend. And the problem with being the rescuer is that it engulfs and overwhelms the person who you're rescuing. They don't get to be a full person. They don't get to make their own mistakes. They don't get to learn things the hard way. And it is not a relationship of equals. So I think that the thing that you need to do, this is the practical advice bit, is withdraw from this role of rescuer. You can be a support. You can hear someone out, share your opinions, but you do not have to be an active participant in the situation at all. You know, your friend is not the first 26-year-old to have a crush on a lecturer. She won't be the last, right? She's going to be fine. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, first of all, this isn't love because love is a reciprocal practice. This is a obsessive infatuation that your friend has created to escape the reality of her life, which she's not happy with on some level, or the reality of herself. Again, I agree with Ash. No, you shouldn't tell her the rumour because it's an unverified rumour. It's got nothing to do with either of you who this lecturer is dating. And in fact, would just add to the drama of the situation if suddenly she's if you tell her that rumor, it puts her as someone who has any stake or any right to know the private business of this lecturer. She hasn't got a relationship with this lecturer beyond a professional one. The lecturer's never done anything to show any romantic interest in her. It is weird if he's dating a student who just graduated a few weeks ago. But again, it's not the business. And if you pull her in, it makes her a third party to the relationship, which she is not. She is literally just a student. She is a student who has an infatuation with her lecturer. So no, you shouldn't tell her the rumor at all. And it also pulls you in again as someone who's trying to, like, instead of be honest about how you feel, you're trying to use this third party rumor as a way to hope it shocks her out of the infatuation, because, oh no, you can't have him because he's got someone else and here's this unverified rumor to prove it. That's not going to stop her if she's obsessively infatuated with him off the back of literally nothing but the need to create her own fantasy. I think you've got two choices. The first choice is the nice choice, which is when she brings this up, say, I'm really sorry. I don't want to talk about this with you unless it's to, you know, discuss how you're feeling, but I don't want to indulge it with the idea of, like, you being like, I'm going to move this, I'm going to do this. You just have, like, say, I have my own opinions on this and why you're doing this, and I don't agree with them, and I will support you in the practical matters of, you know, moving house or whatever, but I don't want to discuss this with you that much. Or you go for the actual truth option, which is when she brings this up to you, say, I have to be honest, I think this is an attempt to create a fantasy and I don't want to indulge it further. I think this is to do with your low self-esteem and I'm happy to talk about that further and support you with your low self-esteem, but I need to be honest with you and I don't want to continue discussing this because I'm going to try and fix it or rescue you and that's not good for our friendship. But the latter option can often offend people, unfortunately. So, because people don't like being told that they are doing something mental or they're being unhealed or whatever, or they're acting out of a place of low self-esteem. So I don't know what the thing is, because it's really hard to watch your friend engage in behaviors where you're just like, please don't fucking do this. Please God, don't fucking do this. It's so deluded. It's hard watching your friend be delusional, because you project onto them being like, if I was being this delusional, I hope someone would save me. And it's hard to be around people when they're being delusional.
But no one can save you. No one can save you. I think the most you can expect is, look, if I was being this delusional, I hope someone would say something. But saying something is not the same as saving someone, right? Because you have to accept that this person is a separate human being from you, and you can't take over their actions and make them do the thing that you think is best for them. And it can come from a real place of love. And like and the reason why I'm saying this is because I know that I can be Captain Save-A-Ho. Like, I know that I can want to, like, rescue my friends and, like, jump in and, like, oh, if you just did this, this and this, like, it would all be, you know, it'd all be fine. You can't do that. You can't do that. You have to accept that they are their own person. They will make their own mistakes and they've got their own path through life. And it, you know, it might be very painful at times. And you can advise and you can suggest and you can give an honest opinion, but that's not the same as control. And you have to learn to let go of that. I suppose, like, one thing that I'd like to, like, say about this, and I say this because I used to be a lecturer. So I used to teach a master's in Amsterdam, and I used to teach on some undergraduate courses here in the UK. I did not fancy any of my students whatsoever. And when I was doing the master's in Amsterdam, it wasn't because there was a big age gap where they were all younger than me. Lots of them were actually older than me. But how I felt about them was like I was like a mother duck, and they were like my little ducklings, like, swimming behind me. Like, I felt protective and I felt responsible, and it was completely unerotic to me. And, like, I remember there was a couple of times where students, like, tried to push that boundary a bit, and I really was just like, I don't know where the fuck you think you are. And it confused me that there could be lecturers who didn't feel the same way, right? Who actually felt an erotic charge based on that inequality of power. Whereas for me, that inequality of power was unerotic, right? It did not make me feel sexy in any way. It made me feel responsible and maternal. But I think that, like, you know, sometimes, often this is very gendered, where men feel a different way and they see someone looking up to them and they find it very sexy. There is nothing less sexy than an object of your fantasy becoming a real person. And I think maybe this is something to say to your friend, which is that, like, well, right now, the reason why you're infatuated is because of the distance and because of the impossibility, and that he gets to be kind of an ideal, right? He gets to be your teacher and he gets to fulfill this ideal. But if you ever got down to it and, like, you know, you'd see his like raggy toenail or his like, you know, little paunch or whatever, or his like sexual insecurities. And he was a real person. Like, trust me, it would not be sexy anymore. And you know, it's like at my own university where, you know, where I was an undergraduate, there were lots of male lecturers who went on that journey, who went from being a kind of like erotic object to fantasy to becoming like a real man riddled with insecurities who's, you know, naked in front of one of his students, and suddenly not sexy anymore. Not sexy.
Yeah, I think the person is right there. It sounds like their friend is quite vulnerable. It sounds like this lecture as well, this infatuation is giving them some direction in life. Like, they've now chosen to stay on in the town post their masters or whatever it is they're doing, in supposedly to stay near this lecturer. I think it sounds like, to me, and this is maybe a reach, it sounds like the pressures of modern life and the need to make a decision at the age of 26 as well about where you're going with your life, they're displacing all of that stress onto this infatuation and using it as a vehicle to direct the rest of their life. But God almighty, you don't want to just stay in a town for someone who doesn't even knows you exist, but doesn't have any feelings towards you beyond that of a lecturer. I do think they sound vulnerable. My advice is, again, don't interfere. If they keep bringing it up again, say, do you want my honest opinion, or do you want to vent about this? Because I don't have like a huge amount of capacity to hear this again because it's distressing for me. But I can try and support you the best way I can. But if you want my honest opinion, I'll tell you it. And that's kind of where you're at. But I think you do, if it's continual that you're hearing this and you constantly are going to try and fix them, you need to tell them, look, I can't hear loads of this because I'm going to try and fix it. And that's not going to be good for us. So let's talk about someone else. You've got to make it boring as well. These dramatic things, you've got to make boring to the person who's
The thing is that if you say about this rumor, you're just injecting like
drama
oxygen into the fire.
It's just rumor. Every time you have it, there's so many things I hear about, like I now, maybe when I was like 18, I would have immediately told like my friend, or 19, or even like, yeah, up to like 24. And now it's like, they don't need to know that. That's actually not going to be healthy for them to know. And I'm not going to tell them. That's what being a good friend is.
I think that sounds like a good place to end this voyage.
We've sailed the ship into the rocks.
Into the rocks. We heard the sirens music and now we are dashed upon the rocks.
I was going to say the sirens is... Oh, wait, last question. If the sirens were singing a song to get you off the boat, what would the song be?
Okay, to get me off the boat.
Well, the sirens are singing. What do you hear?
All right. But like, is a siren song like a sexy song, or is it a song that makes you want to shake your ass?
It's a song that's making you jump in the water and want to sing and go and join the sirens to like hang out. What's the song?
Okay, right, to hang out. Probably Freed from Desire. What about you?
I think the premise is like any song that if you were in the toilet queue, what song would you immediately turn around and have to go back to the dance floor and sing?
Oh my God, there's so many of them. Yeah, Freed from Desire would be one of them.
What's one of mine? I think Church Girl by Beyonce is like one that I'm always like, if I hear that is my anthem. And it's not even my favorite song, it's not any of that, but it's like, this is a song that I need to be on the dance floor and being like, putting my hand up and being like, this is me. You know, she ain't ever hurt nobody. She's trying to do the best she can with her friends, without a man. That is my anthem. So yeah, that's a siren song. If they were singing that, I'd be like swimming over and be like,
yes, lady.
Yeah, like, let's go. As they slowly eat my bones, I'd go down and be like, friends without a man. Anyway, this has been If I Speak. I've been Moira the McLean. You've been
dashed against the rocks. Goodbye.
That rhymes with Ash. Bye.